but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I talked about this on yesterday's show, but this morning I took a private flight out of PDX. And I must say, Stephen, if you've never had a chance to travel on a private aircraft, you should try it sometime. It's not bad. It's not a bad thing to not have to go into the airport, go through the security. Definitely there was a little Beverly Hillbillies in my act, though, this morning, because I didn't know. What can I bring? Can I bring a bag? Can I bring a carry-on plus one personal item? Turns out you just come as you are. But I want to thank, it was the Rotary Club and the Sports Association in Yakima, Washington, flew me this morning over to their luncheon that they do on Thursdays and talked to a crowd. It was a lively crowd. And there's nothing like live performance in front of a lively crowd. I had a good time with it. I'll talk more about it coming up, but I highly recommend it. If you had a chance to get on somebody else's private plane, they wanted to fly me over. They didn't want to do Zoom. And I don't mind that. If you have a chance to get on somebody else's plane, Stephen, you go and you do it, okay? I want you to know that right now. Get after it. Our next guest is the former commissioner of the WAC and the Sun Belt. I'm going to guess Carl Benson's been on a few private planes. As the commissioner in those conferences, Carl Benson, did you travel via private aircraft?
First of all, I got to remember, John, the third one that sometimes you forget, and that's the good old Mid-American Conference.
So, oh, there you go. There you go.
Add a third to my 30-year career as a commissioner, which I'm very proud of. Yes, I was on occasion on a private plane or two, not as many as some of my colleagues in the Big Ten or the SEC, but it is nice, and especially when you don't have to pay for it. And I was surprised to hear that you were in Yakima, Washington. Back when I lived in Yakima as a grade schooler, we pronounced it Yakima. They now pronounce it Yakima.
Yakima.
In honor of the Yakima tribe and the Yakima reservation. So that'd be a pretty cool thing for you.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to get in there. And anytime a group is excited to hear you talk about sports or, you know, and sports used to be such a diversion. And now in a lot of ways, it's a downer. It can be a drag. And so just to see the passion in the room. And, you know, I have to think, you know, as a commissioner, you were one of the guardians of the sport at one time. And you're watching what's happening now. Help us with the bowl season. If we can start in any place, I think the bowl season would be a good place to start. Carl Benson, I put you in charge of fixing the college football bowl season. What are you doing?
Eliminate the weekly rankings. It just is doing no one any real value, you know, except ESPN. And I'm sure those passionate fans in Yakima like to debate it. So the fans like it. The network likes it. ESPN likes it. But I think that it's damaging right now in light of the rankings this last week. Now, you know, I say that as part of the postseason. The overall bowl system, I think, continues to be healthier than maybe what's advertised. It's been reorganized. It's under a good structure called the bowl season now. And as someone whose teams valued those bowl opportunities, I don't think I ever heard a coach talk about a meaningless football bowl game. So, and as Lavelle Edwards, the old BYU coach, said many times, I've never been to a bad bowl game.
The group of five schools, they've got a path into the playoff. And, you know, and I think they would litigate to keep that if it ever came to it. But what should they do beyond that? If beyond the one or two schools that are going to get into this playoff every now and then, what do the rest of the group of five and group of six, what can they do to maybe monetize their own postseason or create opportunities?
I know there's a conversation being done by the, you know, the five commissioners, six commissioners, counting the Pac-12 commissioner, that talks about what can they do, and a separate, you know, postseason is beyond their agenda. I don't think there's consensus right now. I've talked to at least two commissioners in the group who would favor a playoff, some type of a playoff system for themselves, especially if it perhaps led into the spot, determining the spot in the, you know, in the CFP playoff. So I think there's various models that could be done. It would have an impact on the traditional bowl season, perhaps, if not only were there 12 Power Four teams taken out of the bowl system, but now you take the, you know, the four or five champions out of the group of five into some type of a playoff. So that would probably damage the bowl system a little bit. But I know it's on the agenda. I know that they're looking at it. I know too, though, John, that the opportunity, the access that you mentioned into the playoff, now that there is a legitimate 12-team playoff, soon to be 14, 16, I think we can be assured that it's going to be larger than 12. You know, they still want to have that access, you know, the same type of access that they have in the NCAA basketball tournament in terms of starting the season, you know, with their teams, with their fan bases, with their loyal constituencies, that they truly have a chance to, you know, to play for, you know, a national championship. And, you know, Boise State last year, my alma mater, when they went to the Fiesta Bowl to play Penn State, their fans, you know, honestly believed that they had a chance to win a national championship. And, you know, Tulane and James Madison now, those fans and those teams are going there. They're not going to pick up a paycheck. They're going to try to win, you know, win games against Ole Miss and Oregon and advance on into the next round. And so that's really, really important. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be around the table, you know, back in, 1997, you know, almost 30 years ago now, when access was given to the, you know, to the group of five for participation in, you know, what was the Bowl Alliance and the Bowl Championship Series, the BCS, and then the CFP, and now the, you know, the playoff system. And it's always been an important access point, and that access point has changed from 1997, from being a performance based, where it was if you're in the top six, then it went to if you're in the top 12, and each time teams have met that threshold on various levels, to today, now it's a guaranteed spot to the, you know, to the highest ranked. And you know, I believe that there will continue to be hopefully the same access in terms of some type of a guarantee. But I think that there's also a time when you could argue that it needs to be based on performance. And the group of five, over the years, you go back and look at the times that those teams, starting with, you know, with the Utah back in 2004, when, you know, they had one of those great seasons playing in the Mountain West, you know, going undefeated and getting the opportunity to, you know, to play in the Fiesta Bowl in 2004 and winning that game. And then it was another 12 years before Boise State, you know, had their opportunity to play Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl, you know, and they've won those games. And, you know, I did a little look back, and there have been 19 games, you know, over time with group of five participants, including last year's Boise State into the playoff. You know, and the group of five had won 10 out of those 19 games over time. Group of five membership has changed since then. Seven teams that were part of it, Utah, TCU, BYU, SMU, Central Florida, Cincinnati, Houston are no longer Group of Five. They're you know, Power Four. So the membership has changed. And I think that the challenge is for the Group of Five now to deliver like those teams previously, whether it was Utah or Boise State, TCU, UCF, obviously, Houston, Cincinnati, all those teams that pulled those the wins. Even remember, Tulane beat Southern Cal most recently in 2022. In one of those bowl games, so or one of those New Year's Day games. So I think that the Group of Five has proven that they belong in on the big stage, and it's just how do they get there? How do they stay there? And there was pressure last year on Boise State to deliver. They performed, against Penn State. And I think there's tremendous pressure now on Tulane and James Madison to maintain the credibility of the Group of Five.
Carl Benson with us. He's been the commissioner of three Group of Five conferences, including the WAC, Sun Belt, and the MAC, the Mid-American Conference. You used to walk into those rooms and you'd walk in and you'd see the SEC and the Big Ten commissioner back in the day, the Pac-12 commissioner. How did they treat you? How did when you walk into that room, did they treat you with dignity, or did you have the feeling like they always said, oh, we're the Power Five and you're not, as you walked into those conversations in those rooms?
It was a lot funner after Boise State beat Oklahoma. and there was a little bit of recognition, and I remember, after that, at a meeting, an annual meeting with all of the 10 commissioners at the time, the meeting was interrupted, and representatives from Fox Sports walked into the room with a trophy that they gave to me and to Boise State for, the game of the year in terms of the Boise State win over Oklahoma. Probably one of my proudest moments to be in that room and to have that type of an accolade. So it helps when you have credibility. That room has changed now, though, tremendously from, you look at the commissioners, and it's Greg Sankey and John Steinbrecher and Judy McLeod are the only ones that are still there that were there when I was around the table. But, people talk about whether there's still that camaraderie around the table. I think that it has lessened, and it's not just within the FBS conferences. I think it's all 32 Division I conferences. There just isn't that same, just the loyalty and the camaraderie around the table probably has lessened over the course of the last several years.
Carl, if you were giving advice to Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, where should her focus be as the New World Pac-12 launches and begins a football season next year?
I think that she has the foundation, and she has the teams, under the Pac-12 umbrella, that can go out and win those big games and can continue the kind of the tradition of the Group of Five. I know that no one likes that term, the Group of Five, and the separation, and I know that whether it's the Pac-12 or the American or Sun Belt Conference USA or MAC or Mountain West, everyone wants to be the best of that group and forge their way into whatever might be a new system down the road. But I think she's done a wonderful job of putting the right teams around the table. And I think that it's certainly, a promotional piece that they've got to go out and win next year in that first year of the Pac-12 and to set the stage and to put the stake in the ground and say, we are the best. And I think that the Pac-12 name by itself will help that cause and will help that effort to continue it. So, you grew up as a Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12. I grew up in the state of Washington. Talk about Yakima. I'm sure that you ran into both Husky fans and Cougar fans in Yakima, Washington.
Duck fans, everything. Oregon State fans.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. It's a big, you know, college football state. And so I'm rooting for the Pac-12, that's for sure. And I'll continue to, I was born in Oregon and raised in Washington, so I've got a lot of roots in the Pac-12.
All right, you're hitting on something, because I was in this room and, you know, it was a nice crowd and they all wore their jersey of their favorite team. And you're right, there were Husky fans, there were Duck fans, there were Cougar fans, there were Beaver fans, there were Stanford and Army and Navy fans and Notre Dame fans in the room. How, like, who's looking out for the fan these days? Because I keep talking about the greater good and, you know, the conference commissioners will say, yeah, we care about the greater good, but we also need to negotiate what's best for our conference. Is there anybody in your mind, Carl, that is looking out for the greater good of college athletics and college football specifically?
You know, that that for 100 years was supposed to be the NCAA. And, you know, the past several years now, in light of the legal challenges and the role that television is playing, that the NCAA has lost some of that oversight and some of that governance. I still think it's there. I hope it can be regained. Commissioners now need to take that role within their own conferences. You know, I think that Teresa has hit on some in terms of the scheduling of the Pac-12 football games for next year, knowing in advance. I mean, I have friends who are longtime Cougar season ticket holders and longtime Husky season ticket holders, and their biggest gripe was those 8 o'clock games in Seattle or Pullman when they had to, you know, either drive to Olympia or drive from Pullman to Spokane or whatever. And I think that, you know, that there has been a recognition that there needs to be some real direct correlation between your fan base and how convenient it is to get to and from their games.
Notre Dame's athletic director, Pete Bevacqua, went after Jim Phillips of the ACC. For people who don't know Jim Phillips, I mean, his reputation as being sort of a unifier and an upstanding person, I think, precedes him, walks into the room in front of him in some ways. Give us an idea. Was Notre Dame's AD out of line here, Carl, or was he right to go after the ACC a little bit?
You know, we probably, when I say we, commissioners in general, all have had disgruntled athletic directors and presidents and fans that have attacked us and questioned our integrity. And it's a tough one to accept. You hope that it's not longstanding and that apologies can be made. But, you know, the old adage, you know, families don't air their dirty laundry, you know, outside of the family, has kind of normally been a, you know, something that we all want to try to adhere to. And this certainly went viral. And Jim Phillips, as I've known him for 20 years or more, he handled it in a professional, you know, very, very professional way. And, you know, again, ADs, you know, have changed over time too, that the characteristics of ADs, their background, they're not familiar with how college sports operates and manages. So was he out of line? You know, I'd say that he probably wishes that he could take back what he said.
The you know, Brett Yormark came to his defense, Jim Phillips' defense. You know, you've seen the Big 12 and the ACC sort of align themselves. Here's what Yormark said publicly about Notre Dame's athletic director.
I will say this, and I'm a little outspoken about it. I don't like how Notre Dame's reacted to it.
So,
okay, I think Pete's his behavior has been egregious. It's been egregious going after Jim Phillips when they saved Notre Dame during COVID. We all knew, and it was very transparent. Hunter was very transparent about it, the chair, that as Notre Dame and Miami got closer together, head-to-head would be a factor. Okay? BYU lost. They became closer together. Head-to-head made a difference in that decision. So I think he is totally out of bounds in his approach. And if he was in the room, I'd tell him the same thing.
All right. You've been a commissioner. Tell us what we're hearing there. Is that the Big 12 who has, in a lot of ways, been in partnership with the ACC backing each other, or is that just your mark being your mark?
Yeah, I don't know, Brent, but I respect the fact that he has been outspoken, you know, throughout his tenure, and he's not afraid to say something out of the room or inside the room. But again, I don't know what purpose it necessarily provides. It was a tough bitter pill to swallow, and there have been a lot of other teams. I mean, 2 years ago at this time, you know, Florida State gets the rug pulled out from under them. In 1996, I had the rug pulled out from under me when BYU got snubbed and didn't go to the Fiesta Bowl, which really changed all this that we were talking about early on in terms of access for the Group of Five. I mean, it landed me testifying in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, reading from a prepared script that legal counsel provided, knowing that what I was about to say, you know, possibly could have ruined my career, when I accused, you know, Roy Kramer, the commissioner of the SEC, and Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten, of, you know, conspiracy that they kept BYU out of the Fiesta Bowl. And did I continue a friendship and a relationship with, you know, with Roy and Jim? Absolutely. I was with Jim last month at his place in North Carolina playing golf. Roy Kramer came to the WAC summer meetings 1 year to talk about what it means to be a member of a conference at a time when I was putting the WAC back together, and we had new schools and new coaches, and Roy came in and talked about the SEC and, you know, and what it means. And so I was able to withstand that, and I'm, you know, sure that I hope that Pete and Jim can come back together and work for the good of the cause.
Carl Benson, I appreciate you. Thank you for joining us, former commissioner of the WAC and the MAC, Mid-American Conference, and the Sun Belt. Good perspective on the Group of Five. It is a special day today, and tomorrow especially. Tomorrow is really special because the Baldface Truth Foundation, which helps kids in art, music, education, and athletics, as kind of our day and a half long celebration of kids in our community. I'm going to talk about that coming up. Plus, we'll give you the latest on Sharon Moore as Michigan pivots. Is it going to be Jed Fish? Steven, are they going after Jed? Does Washington fan need to be nervous right now?
Nervous or happy, depending on how you feel about Jed Fish. Right? I mean, I honestly kind of think that, but I mean, Fish, he hasn't signed an extension with Washington, so yeah, no. I mean, I think if you are a Washington fan, you're a Jed Fish fan, you may need to watch out for Jed Fish to Michigan.
And the only part of that should bother you if you're a Washington fan is the timing of it. And I keep coming back to that, like, it's really hard for Washington State, because Washington State right now is trying to drill down on who to hire as their next football coach. And I did talk a little bit with Rick Neuheisel in the last 2 days, and, you know, he's having a conversation today with Washington State's president, Elizabeth Cantwell, and he's spoken to the athletic director at Washington State. I don't know how serious a candidate he is, but he's a candidate, and I think Washington State's trying to figure out, all right, life after Jimmy Rogers, what do we do here? How do we do this? And, you know, January 2nd is looming. That's when the portal opens. But you want to have your coach in place before January 2nd. You want to give your coach a chance to maybe have a few days of fundraising before January 2nd and get an idea of, like, hey, let me recruit my own roster and then go after what I need. So there isn't time element here for Washington State that is imperative. Now comes, like, because Washington State couldn't have seen Penn State was going to take so long. They get Matt Campbell. Iowa State turns and grabs Jimmy Rogers. The food chain is, this is how it works. It's just down the food chain. Now comes Washington State. Now Washington State poaches Montana State's coach. Then Montana State's got to go look for a new coach. It's just there's a food chain thing working on down the line here. Washington's not a food chain thing. Washington is, can you believe what Sharon Moore did? Like, you can't make it up. Again, I'm going to give him 48 hours before I render my full judgment here. I want a little bit more, but I'm not hearing great things, not reading great things. And my friends who cover Michigan are saying, yeah, everyone kind of knew that some of this stuff was going on behind the scenes. And I'm like, well, why wasn't it reported? But still, this was not a food chain thing at Washington. It was a food chain thing when Kalen DeBoer got poached, because Alabama's at the top of the food chain. And they turned around and they went, we want that guy, and they took him. So now Michigan, top of the food chain. But here's the problem. This wasn't like a normal, hey, we're going to move on from our coach. Sharon Moore went 9-3. He lost to Ohio State. Somebody in the athletic department apparently tipped off administrators at Michigan, said, hey, there's an improper relationship going on. And, oh, man, was there more to it? And then Michigan goes, well, we can't have that, especially if it's going to get out. We need to look like we're serious about this stuff. And so Michigan fires him. And now this is not ideal for Washington. So if you're going to lose Jed Fish, you prefer that Jed goes, you know, a couple weeks ago, right after the Oregon game. And Jed goes, hey, I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm going to Florida, right? Because that leaves you more options. If you're Washington, now what do you do if Jed goes? I guess Jonathan Smith's out there, and that's a guy they would have hired in the last cycle, but has the shine come off Jonathan Smith? There's some other people out there, too. But it's less than ideal, or do you just go, hey, we need an interim coach, and we buy ourselves a year, and we regroup? I had a Washington fan come up to me today at this event I was speaking at, and they said, you know, if Jed gets poached, what do you do if you're Washington? And, oh, by the way, is this just going to be how it is? Every 2-3 years, we're going to lose our coach. And I said, it'll be that way until Washington develops a homegrown coach that's got ties to Washington or Seattle that make this person a forever hire. That's kind of what Oregon has done with Dan Lanning. They hired a guy whose alma mater is William Jewell College. It's not like he's going to leave Oregon to go coach William Jewell. So, you know, he's untethered in that way. But Washington's got to find one like that or develop a coach and stick a coach on the, you know, in the offensive coordinator position who's a former Husky, who you can grow into the next guy. Otherwise, you are playing this game at Washington. And Washington fans don't want to be viewed as a stepping stone. But the reality is, you're not an upper-tier Big Ten team. So you're going to lose to the Michigans. You're going to lose to the Alabamas of the world if you have success. And that is your reality. Stick around. We got so much more to talk about. Big day, special day, and a special couple days. Go to bftauction.com. You want to see some of those great auction items. There's going to be more auction items added. Tomorrow on the show, we will pump it up even more. The auction lots will close tomorrow at 6 o'clock. So it's a great time to get a looky-loo right now and share it with friends and family. bftauction.com. Stick around. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.